Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
All right, you're very welcome back to Wednesday's Off the Ball. I'm delighted to be joined on the line from Tokyo by rugby referee Joy Neville. Evening, Joy.
Hey, Nathan, how are you?
Or to give you your official title now, World Rugby Referee of the Year and Rehab Sportsperson of the Year. It's pretty lofty heights.
You're the first person to say that, and I hope you're the last. I cringe when I hear that, but yeah, it's pretty spectacular, to be honest. I don't necessarily like the titles, but it's cool.
That's very cool. And to get a Rehab Sports Award and to be the Sports Person of the Year and honoured by people around the country, it only happened last weekend. Was it a surprise?
No. To be honest, it wasn't. Rehab had contacted me and just said that I was nominated, so I left it at that. And literally in the same call, the same conversation, they said, "And you're actually being chosen as a sports person." And I was pretty shocked. So the girls, the friends, always slag me now. They're like, "Geez, you're on social media again." And I was like, "Lads, you know, you get an award for getting an award, you know." But no, I'm obviously honoured, extremely honoured, and. In the best possible sense, quite embarrassed, because due to the fact that the amount of the people who've received have been recipients of the rehab rewards to date, like, they're just spectacular, inspirational people, and what they're trying to achieve compared to, I suppose, what I'm trying to achieve personally and overall. But look, I'll take it, and I'm obviously delighted to receive it, the award.
It caps off a pretty incredible 12 months for you. First woman to referee in the Pro 14, first woman to referee in the Challenge Cup. And those type of awards are given for people who are inspirational. Does that something that weighs on your shoulders, or it's something you really embrace, that you go out there, yes, I am representing young women who want to go on and be referees in what's generally a male-dominated sport? Or is it just something you're thinking about yourself and this all comes with it?
Look, I mean, if this benefits others and opens up, like, obviously I'd like to open up further opportunities for other referees coming through, female referees coming through. But, do I see myself as a trailblazer? No, I don't. I mean, I'm there to do a job. And, I am very conscious of the minority group that probably are waiting for me to make mistakes and, you know, prove that, you know, it's no place for a woman to be refereeing in the male professional game. And when I say minority, I'm talking about very few people. Mm. But I think that's my ammunition, and that's my drive. And I suppose it motivates me to be as prepared as possible in order to perform. And yeah, it's a great drive to have, and thankfully I'm enjoying what I'm doing, and thankfully I'm doing the job to the standard necessary.
It's all been a bit of a whirlwind. It's only 5 years since you were winning a Grand Slam as a player with Ireland, and now to be thinking about, well, can I go and referee Six Nations games for women and for men, or be on the sideline, whatever it is. It's been a meteoric rise, and it seems as though it's such a brilliant example to rugby players who retire and are looking for what's next, that you can go get down this route and you can move up the ranks quite quickly. But also for maybe young people who are playing rugby at 20, 21, who aren't going to get to that highest level and are wondering how they can stay involved in the game, that actually, if you go, you dedicate yourself to refereeing, where there are opportunities, because it's not the type of profession that I'd say they're overrun with numbers with, that actually, yeah, you can move up the ranks. You can get a lot of opportunities for yourself.
Absolutely. There's massive opportunities. And I think there's a massive stigma when it comes to refereeing. And I certainly was of the view that, you know, like, I was, when I was approached about refereeing, I had no more interest. And part of the reason was because who wants to be a referee when there's no winner? And that's the perception, that there's no winner, where in fact there is. And, you know, the aim of the game is to go out there, do a job. I certainly think of the players as a past player, and I try to give the best platform as possible and remain as anonymous as possible. While that's not always the case, we're human in the end of the day, and mistakes will be had. But certainly there's so many opportunities, and particularly for past players, I think, there's massive opportunities and openings for them, as certainly in my case. And I know, speaking of Frank Murphy and Johnny Lacey and Andy Brace, they've all played before becoming referees, that you have that extra benefit and insight and understanding to what the players are trying to achieve. And I certainly feel that it gives you a step ahead, if anything.
You often see in soccer in particular, and it causes a controversy for a couple of days, where a referee might give a penalty or might give an advantage and the player goes on to score a goal and he gives a little fist pump or something, and then you're accused of bias and all sorts. Whereas actually they're probably just celebrating making that right decision. And what you talk about there of the satisfaction of being a referee and doing a good job, how does that compare to when you were playing and when you were winning games for Ireland? Is it a very different emotion on full time? Like, do you get a real sense of satisfaction if you make all the right decisions when you're in the dressing room afterwards?
It's so different, but yet it's quite similar. But, you know, when you're playing with a team, you're not alone. You make a mistake, your buddy beside you will pick you up. You'll have the consequences afterwards in analysis and in selection, but at least you have 14 others around and bench behind you and supporting you and reassuring you. But as a referee, you're in the middle, you make one mistake, all eyes are on you. You certainly grow thick skin. But as far as personal challenge, it is a lot, like extremely challenging, and particularly with the main challenge for me, and I know for others, would be the man management. You know, trying to change player behaviour, keeping the players on your side. You know, the man management is massive, but there's certainly that sense of achievement going off at pitch when both teams, winners and losers, come up to you and say, "Geez, you were brilliant. Thanks very much." And that obviously doesn't happen all the time, but when it does, it's quite special.
Yeah, and on the other side, I guess one of the differences is when you do make a mistake, that as a player, there's an opportunity to go out and redeem yourself and play better the next time. Whereas when you're a referee and you make a mistake, it can have long-lasting impacts on other people, on the 30 players on the pitch who are 15 who are devastated by your decision, and you go back in, you realise, actually, maybe I did make a mistake here. How do you deal with that side of it if you do look back and you realise, maybe I did get that wrong? Who do you turn to? How do you keep yourself going so that actually you don't doubt yourself? Because I guess self-confidence is a huge thing for referees.
Absolutely. There's an expectation of excellence when it comes to referees and always getting the right, correct decision. But again, it's just not the case. It's just not possible for any referee. And for the first 9 months of refereeing, I absolutely detested it. And I was about to give up. And my wife just convinced me to stick at it. She said there was something there. And actually, ex-international referee Helen O'Reilly, it was Helen who convinced Simona for me to stick at it. But and part of the reason why I really didn't like it is because I played 70 times. I had 70 different referees refereeing me at international level, and I expected it to be that good from the very beginning, which is not going to be the case. Mistakes are going to happen. And, you know, I think we as humans, we need to embrace mistakes in new environments, because you learn from the mistakes and understand why they happen in order for them not to happen again, or minimize the chances of them happening again, or even understanding and learning how to react differently or better. But yeah, look, I think it's all part and parcel of the job, and it's about learning from those moments and trying to improve upon them.
You're moving more and more into refereeing men's games. Is there a difference in the reaction to men over women when a mistake is made? Have you noticed any difference?
No, I haven't actually. What I have noticed in the men's and women's game is when you referee the women, they're a lot more honest. You'll find in restarting the scrums and stuff, they play the scrum to restart the game. Whereas in the men's game, you know, some teams play the scrums for penalties. But as far as reaction from the guys and stuff, you know, the first couple of years, certainly I came across a few barriers and bumps in the road, but it was just about dealing with it and not getting defensive. And just, you know, fobbing it off. And that, again, was the motivation for me just to go out there. And remember being approached by an older gentleman there, "Oh, you're here to ref the thirds." And I'm like, "No, I'm actually here to ref the first." He goes, "Well, gee, you'll be able to keep up with the game of play and the speed of play." And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm sure it'll be fine." And, you know, I go out there and my aim then is to do the best I can and obviously prove and maybe educate that person and people like him that it's just about the job being done. It is no difference or relevance to the gender in the middle. It's just the job and to be done in a certain standard. And thankfully, accuracy in penalties, obviously, it's extremely important. And when players see the referee is making accurate calls, you know, they don't see the gender. They just see a referee, which is wonderful.
It's brilliant. But as you say, there's still a minority, albeit maybe a tiny minority, who still do look at you and think, why is a woman refereeing a men's game? Does that piss you off, or do you just realise, are you at a stage in your life where you go, well, listen, it's a tiny, tiny minority. The players are accepting of me. The coaches are accepting of this. Everybody is accepting except this 1%. Are you able to move on, or is there still times where you get a little bit pissed off at it?
Not at all. I don't, because I don't like, everyone's entitled to their opinion. But if there's an opinion out there that I really don't agree with, you know, let them off, take no interest. You know, you've heard of a few opinions from Australian players about certain subjects, and so out there, and you just don't take any notice of it, to be honest. It's, you know, it doesn't bother me, and I certainly won't be looking to be their best friends. So I just get on with it and just do my job.
You're probably now at a stage where you're the most high-profile woman involved in the men's game. There's not too many women coaches involved at a senior level in the provinces or around European rugby. What was your reaction then? And I'm sure you were following the trial when you were reading about the WhatsApp messages and about the attitudes towards women and the misogynistic tone and the lad culture and the conversations that have been happening around it. Were you shocked by the fallout and what's been going on in recent weeks? Or actually, was a part of you who'd been in that setup for the last couple of years, was there a part of it that realised, yeah, this actually does make sense, that this sort of thing is still there?
Look, to be honest, Nathan, I can't really get involved in on this subject. I didn't really get into the case either, because I didn't like what I was hearing, as far as, you know, just didn't like the case from the very beginning. And I didn't get into the ins and outs of it. And, you know, only they know the exact truth of what went on. And, you know, the lads have been seen as not guilty. And I just, you know, I think in this case there's been no winners at all, and it's just an unfortunate case. And that's all I'm going to say, really, to be honest.
Yeah, that's totally fair enough. One thing that's often said about rugby is that the attitudes and the relationship between players and referees is far better than it is with the other sports, particularly here in Ireland with Gaelic games and with soccer. And do you see that? Do you think you could have been and had the success you've had if you went down, say, the soccer route?
Well, do you know what? Hats off. And I often say this, hats off to any GAA and soccer officials, because I know people always say that rugby is a gentleman's sport. And I know, like, different organisations, where European rugby and Pro 14, they set high standards and player retaliation, and that referees, you know, address it so that it doesn't spiral out of control. And thankfully, you know, that you know, gentleman's sport, the title has remained. You know, I really don't understand when you know, players react towards referees, particularly in soccer, in the professional game, when they're getting paid so much money. It really frustrates me, because for me, when you're an athlete, when you're a professional sports person, you know, part of your responsibility and role is to lead by example and teach younger people coming through what way you should act and treat officials. Without officials, there is no game. And there should be respect there. And it really bugs me when you see players, you know, shout or curse at referees, get in their faces, and they get away with it. I think it's very important that the organisations take action in preventing those situations. And you see young kids then coming out and playing the sports, whatever sports, and reacting the same way. And it's just teaching them the wrong, I suppose, the bad standards and wrong standards.
Yeah, even as you say, I think something that's probably seen as quite small in soccer, which is shouting in the face of the referee, which they see week in, week out in the Premier League, and it probably doesn't even get you booking half the time at this stage, then leads on to the more extremes of the behaviour, and particularly in the last week or so, and we're still waiting to see what sort of punishment Buffon is going to get for his attack on Michael Oliver, which I think a lot of people are outraged about, and particularly because Michael Oliver, again, like yourself, is such a good example. He was refereeing in the Premier League at 25, the youngest ever referee in the Premier League, and he's got himself to such a high level. And then you still have to put up with this for getting the decision spot on. He was actually right to give the penalty kick, and he was right to send Buffon off for his reaction. It seems to be the lack of leadership above, that there was an attitude amongst some football people that actually Buffon at 40, he should be entitled to do whatever he wants.
Well, do you know what? Hats off to Oliver. I mean, that is not an easy thing to do. And I've always, and we've discussed this amongst the referee, elite referees, and that As a referee, you do not want to make any decisions to that would lead to the outcome of the game in the 82nd minute to not only award a penalty, which in my eyes was a right decision, but also to red card a player, and the player of that caliber and experience and legendary title that he has. Like, I'm a massive fan of Buffon, and my wife Simona was going mad because she's a massive Juventus fan as well and loves him. But look, in the end of the day, and I suppose she sees it from a referee's eyes now, and she's probably quite protective of me when I said to her, how would you like if a player came up behind me and nudged me or pushed me? And I think he made both correct decisions. I'm very unfortunate that happened to Buffon, and I know emotion, and it was his last, last year before he was retiring, and, you know, to qualify for this was it the semi? So, look, he has to take responsibility for his actions, unfortunately. It doesn't define him. One instance doesn't define him for a massive, wonderful career that he has. But I think, fairness to the referee, he was spot on.
One of the comments afterwards was that he's become used to refereeing games. He's been used to using his influence. We often hear that in rugby as well, that a good captain has a good dialogue with the referee, that they're well able to manage the referee. Do you see that as a referee? Do you see captains who like to talk to you a lot, who maybe have a subtle influence, or do you have the same attitude to every single player, every single captain?
Oh no, you do. You have, you know, Elwyn Jones. You've so many experience. It's down to experience and being able to knowing the law. You know, knowing the game so well, and it's all part and parcel of the game. And hats off to them. And you know, if they can stretch the referee in his decisions or her decisions in that way, well, fair play to them, because you know that's what it's all about. Getting the win and trying to get the decisions so that it benefits your team. And yeah, absolutely. And I think that you know, the Rory Bess, they're just class players, and I think they know the boundaries. And if they do cross that line, it takes a good referee and a wise referee to put them back in their back in their box. And you've seen it happen so many times, and they do know where the line where not to cross that line. You know, so it's I admire it.
What's next then? Refereeing, it seems a almost abnormal profession in terms of ambition and where you might want to go, and been quite public about that, because referees are often, well, they're at their best, as you say, sometimes when they're anonymous and they sort of live their lives in the shadows. I don't know if it's the type of thing you can sit here and go, I want a referee in a Rugby World Cup, I want a referee in a Rugby World Cup final, if that sort of ambition is appreciated in the industry.
Well, you know, I do, you know, I think it's important to always have your goals, and, you know, as you progress in a career, your goals change. And my initial goal was to referee in AIL Division 1A, and like that 2 years ago. And to be honest, if you asked me when I first began whether any of the rest that has come since then would have been possible, I truly would have said not a hope. So, yeah, my next goals, I suppose, would be, you know, the Women's Sevens World Cup is in San Francisco in July, and the refereeing squad is to be released in the next week. So I'm hoping to be in contention to be selected for that. Would love to be involved in a 20 Six Nations, Men's Six Nations, maybe next year, if that was a possibility, or in the year after. And the big milestone goal for me would be to be on the line for a Six Nations men's game. I've already done two-tier November's Test Series games, one of which was Japan, France and Japan, in the new Racing Stadium, which is amazing, by the way. So I suppose that they're the things I'm going to try to aspire to achieve. And I'll do whatever I can to try to achieve those. And if I don't, you know, I've enjoyed every single bit of this journey, and you know, long may it last.
How are you judged as you look to move along those markers? Is it the refereeing authority sets certain markers along the way that you have to hit, or is it one person's opinion as to who they feel is progressing the best? How do they make those sort of decisions, and what sort of influence can you have on them?
Well, you have members on committees from different unions for each of the competitions, and some of them which would double up on job. But I think it's just consistent performances. Like, I've done one Pro 14 and two Challenge Cup games now, and it's just not about, you know, the one hit wonder. It's not about, you know, getting through the game. And I think it's about maintaining performance and being in contention for further selection and doing those games and doing them well. And You know, the thing with rugby particularly, it's such a technical sport. And as a referee, is you come across different scenarios in different games. And it's just, I think it's for the selectors and those who decide upon your future is how you respond. And you know, even when you don't respond in the right way, how you bounce back up. You know, because it's because you can make the wrong decisions. And it's, you know, it's very important you don't dwell on them, because you dwell on the last ruck and you miss something in the next one. So...
Do you watch back your games the way you would have when you were a player?
Yeah, so like people actually wonder what we do as full-time referees, and it's a very good question, but it is full on. There's six of us full-time and one part-time, and so we train 2 to 3 times a week with the strength conditioner in Limerick, and on a Monday, we'd analyze our games. We have a very in-depth analysis that takes place. You have to break down your own game, and then you have to put it up in a system whereby it's broken down into different areas: scrum, line-out, maul, management, high-impact decisions, all the aspects, team of four, and you have to clip your game, the goods, the work-ons and where you could, you know, do better, and then you have to, you know, do a compilation of every aspect of the game and put it into essay style and put it down on the system, where your PR, your assessor then will come clip his pieces of video that he thinks that could be improved upon, and then he pretty much writes the article, and we look at both and see where we can go from there.
Right.
So that will be done, let's say, Monday, Tuesday, and come Wednesday, Thursday, you do your research. So if you were refereeing on the Friday, you'd be looking at both sides, at least their last two games, analysing, trying to look at possible trends that you may come across. And then come Thursday, Friday, you're travelling. So we're away. Like, if you think about it, players are away half the time, so they play some of their game, most half their games at home. We don't have any home games, so we're pretty much abroad most weekends.
So you would be well aware going into a game who the serial offenders are, and if you've watched back their two previous games, you probably realise they haven't learned their lesson from the first match. You'd have that sort of awareness and a keen eye for certain things that certain players do.
Yeah, well, I can only speak for myself. I know a few of the lads will be very similar, and I think it's about having a balance of not going in with the preconception of what you're looking for from. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, and absolutely, it happened to me before where I did have that preconception. And again, it's something that you do it, you learn from it, and you kick on. And since then, thankfully, I've got that balance. But I would certainly because the game is so technical, little things like, if you look at the defence, do they often, you know, would they not engage in the maul from a line-out? In that case, you're prompted to look at, was the ball at the front of the maul or is it the back? If it's the back, you know, you have to ask them to break off, or else it's obstruction. And if it's at the front, they can carry on. And I think it's just giving yourself an opportunity to be able to react to these situations rather than them, you know, catching you by surprise.
Joy, it's been brilliant talking to you. You're over in Tokyo at the Women's Sevens World Series. Enjoy the rest of that, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon when you're back in Ireland.
You're a star. Thanks, Nathan. Lovely chatting with you.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.